This episode is brought to you by FinditNWA.com, your hyper-local business directory connecting you with the best of Northwest Arkansas. Whether you're looking for a new place to eat, a trusted service provider, or unique local shops, FinditNWA has you covered. We also highlight businesses with a featured listing on the site. That means if you're a small business owner in NWA, you could be next. Discover more at FinditNWA.com.
It's time for another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas, the podcast covering the intersection of business, culture, entrepreneurship, and life in general here in the Ozarks. Whether you are considering a move to this area or trying to learn more about the place you call home, we've got something special for you. Here's our host, Randy Wilburn.
Hey, folks, and welcome back to another episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and I'm excited to be with you as always. I am sitting here in the Furman Garner Performance Studio at KUAF. It is always nice to be back in the station to record a podcast episode. And folks, I got a great episode for you. I know that you've heard a lot of, we've covered a lot when it comes to social issues here in Northwest Arkansas. You know, we don't talk about politics or religion. We try to leave other podcasts to deal with those topics, but in all seriousness, we love talking about some of the issues that impact us here in our community. And one of the things, since the first time that I created this podcast, when I did my first episode, I said, you know, I want to make sure that we are talking about and addressing some of the needs that our community has. And one of those needs and issues that we deal with on a regular basis is housing. And more importantly, the conversation around homelessness. And I have mentioned to a lot of you guys on this podcast before that I used to live in the Bay Area. And so I actually saw what homelessness was up close and personal living in San Francisco. And if you've never been to San Francisco, I think it would be hard for you to understand what it's like until you go there. And the city gets an unfortunate knock because of that. And so even with the challenges that they have from a homelessness issue, it's still an amazing city, and it's a city that has a tremendous upside. And so when I think about the issue of homelessness as a whole, I think it's one of those things that every community has to figure out how to address it. San Francisco's working out the way they can address it. And even here in Northwest Arkansas, a place where we have a Fortune One, we have Tyson and J.B. Hunt and I mean, you know, universities and everything else right in our own backyard, we've got our own issues when it comes to homelessness. And homelessness is creeping up as an issue around the country. And so I think it's important upon all of us, right? Because I always say on this podcast, it takes a village, right? It takes all of us to be a part of the change that we so desperately seek. And so I'm hoping that today's conversation, more than anything else, will get you to start talking about the issue of homelessness. And especially how we deal with it here in Northwest Arkansas, because one of the things that I will admit for sure about Northwest Arkansas is that we are on the uptick. We're growing. It's one of the fastest growing MSAs in the country. And more importantly than not, we still are at the early stages of how this area is going to grow. And so if we can get a handle on homelessness now, today, in 2040, it might look a lot different for us here in this area. And so that's why conversations like today's is really, really important. And that's also why I'm thankful that I made a connection with Will Roth. And Will is a nephew of a very dear friend of mine who I got to spend time with in Africa, David Roth. I'm going to just give him a shout out on that. And then Will is the president of Seven Hills Homeless Center in Fayetteville. And Will is just an amazing individual. I thought I knew a lot of people. This guy knows a lot of people. And so I'm so glad I've made a connection with him and I'm having a chance to have a conversation about something that is so near and dear to his heart. And he said, you know what? You need to have a conversation with our CEO at Seven Hills, and that is Becky Sisson. And Becky is just, she has an interesting story in and of itself because she is a returnabout to Northwest Arkansas. She left after high school. She said, peace out. but then came back and has decided to call make Northwest Arkansas home again. And so she has a really interesting story. So without further ado, I know that was a long preamble, but I wanted to give you a flavor of what we're going to talk about today. I want to welcome Will Roth and Becky Sisson to the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. How are you guys doing?
Great.
Thank you so much, Randy. We're really excited to be here and to tell a little bit of our story with Seven Hills.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's, why don't we start with you, Becky, since as the CEO, you are dealing with this on a daily basis. I would love for you just to give our listenership an introduction to Seven Hills, the center there in Fayetteville, which is down on the south of School Street below downtown Fayetteville. And tell us a little bit about the work that you guys are doing.
Oh, absolutely. So Seven Hills has a day center or a resource center that is actually housed at 1832 South School. So that property is really great. Anyone who is in crisis or has an immediate need can actually show up at that center from 8:30 until 5:30 Monday through Friday. And that's kind of where we were doing business whenever I first started back about a year and a half ago. People can come in and get food, get a shower, get clothing if they need it, meet with legal aid, anything that is kind of keeping them from immediate needs being met. We also really work with people who come and see us at the day center to make sure that they have their ID, Social Security, if they need SNAP benefits, all of those things that might help them take one step further in life. They're going to find that at the day center. So the amount of people that we see on a daily basis, it can average from 75 to 150. It depends on the season. It depends on the day of the month, actually. As we all know, usually the first of the month, someone's maybe getting some benefits, but we really start off focusing our services there. And we're having people come into the center and kind of waiting to be on a by name list or a housing list. In March of this past year, it seems like it's been March of this year, we actually partnered with the city of Fayetteville through ARPA funding and opened an overnight shelter.
Okay.
And so we have a property at 828 South School that had been there for a while that was more of a permanent supportive housing, transitional housing facility. And when I came in, I was like, this is great. We've got about 12 to 15 people who are in transitional housing. And the rooms are a nice enough size that if we reimagine this a little bit, we could maybe have 4 beds in each room and have a 64-bed shelter. And if we did that, that might give us a chance to get people off the street and out of crisis so that they can move forward just a little bit. So the board was very brave, and I would love to say that they immediately said, let's do it. But, you know, we had some good conversation, and it was scary to change programming. I'm never one to really sit in it and say we've been doing it this way, so let's keep doing it this way.
Right.
So we reimagined it, and we are now at 32 beds. We started slow, and then hopefully by October, we'll have 64 people in shelter. So let's talk about what that looks like. Can I talk about what that looks like?
Yeah.
Can I give you a little visual? So people come to the day center, and out of the 100, let's just for a round number, say 100 people, 70 of those people are interested in moving out of homelessness.
Mm-hmm.
Probably about 8% are, you know, we're going to be outside forever. Like, we really like the freedom of being outside. And then there's going to probably be about 10 to 15 that are dealing with extreme mental illness or addiction that are chronically homeless as well. So we've really been working through that first 70, those easy, I would like to say, the people who are ready to make a change and make a difference. And we'll sit with them and say, we would love for you to come into our overnight shelter. The rules are pretty simple. You know, we want you to, you know, be kind to each other. Let's, you know, no rowdiness and, you know, clean up after yourselves and kind of help us and partner. So people will then go to the overnight shelter and stay for 30, 60, 90 days, maybe a year if they need to. But that whole purpose is, let's get you off the street and give you a moment just to breathe. And I would like to say that the first 16 that we brought in are still there and kind of going strong and going through their plans. But there have been some people who've come into shelter and it's not been quite right for them.
Yeah.
But we get them into shelter and we have case management come aside and say, okay, you're here. How did you get here? And what are the next steps that you need to take to be more self-sufficient, to have some independence? And so we've done that with that first 32 of the people that we've had. Those 32 beds have housed 52 people. That means that we've had people that have come into shelter and have moved on, meaning that we've, as of today, we've had 16 people since March come through our shelter and find a place to call home.
Wow.
Right? And we've had people get jobs. So this morning, I was over at the shelter about 7 o'clock this morning to have coffee, because that's what happens. We have staff on site and they get up in the morning, and coffee's a big deal. It's very relational for us. It's very relational for everybody in the community, including the unsheltered. We had 10 people getting ready to go get on the bus to go to a job. I think what happens is whenever you have a life crisis or something, it can be as simple as a medical bill. It can be, you know, being evicted. It's really easy to lose hope very quickly. And so shelters kind of giving people, our unsheltered guests, the opportunity to take a moment and sit and say, wow, that was a life event that really shook me to my core. And I need to take some time to get back on track. And so that's what we're really working on at the shelter for that to happen. And we're seeing huge success with that. So whenever we open up the next 32 beds before cold weather hits, we know that we're going to have 64 people that are going to be seeing case management and hopefully coming and meeting their goals on a daily basis. When we started the shelter, I knew that I had some experience because I've worked with the homeless population for years.
So yeah, and just for interesting sake, I'd love for you to just share just a teeny bit of your superhero origin story, because I think it takes a special person to do the work that you're doing and to champion this cause, right? I mean, we all see homelessness and realize, yeah, that's a problem, but that doesn't necessarily mean that we step up to the plate. And you stepped up to the plate and have been doing so for some time.
Well, I had that East Coast experience where you had the West Coast experience, right?
Right.
It's happening on the West Coast. It's happening on the East Coast. And when I spent several years in Boys and Girls Clubs, which great organization, worked for a YMCA for a little bit. The last part of my career in Virginia before I moved back to Arkansas was at the Roanoke Rescue Mission, and actually lived on campus. And I tell that story because it wasn't like I lived offsite. I actually lived on campus, and it was a 400 bed facility. And if someone didn't show up to work a night shift, we were on site and available to do that. So really found this common denominator in my life. And it's really not it's not a career. It's more of a lifestyle. It's just something that I'm very passionate about. There was always some aspect of people being unsheltered or being in extreme need. And that was the common denominator with Boys and Girls Club. It was, young kids that were, their parents were struggling or they were doubling up. And at the YMCA, we were giving showers and working with the rescue mission before I went to go work at the rescue mission. But never thought in a million years that when I came back to Northwest Arkansas, that I would find a job that I would love.
Wow.
Never thought that I would walk into our facility at South School and recognize people that I grew up with. And that's what happened. I live in Siloam Springs. I drive over to Fayetteville every day. It's not just Fayetteville. It's Siloam Springs. It's Bentonville. It's Rogers. And it's really touching all of us. And it's just become something that I'm really passionate about and something that it really is so easy to help a person better themselves.
Yeah.
When they're ready. It really often just takes a conversation or, we can kind of pull you through this. We can help you get eyeglasses today. You need to get your medication. We can make sure that that happens today. And so I wouldn't want to say that our job is the hardest job that we have, but it's also probably one of the most rewarding jobs that we have.
It has to be. I mean, just when you hear a lot of times, it's like, I love to problem solve. And, sometimes in my mind, I'm thinking, oh, that's an easy problem to solve. But then what we don't realize is that there are a lot of our fellow citizens that don't have the requisite tools or the ability to solve that problem for themselves. And it's not to say that they are less than in any way, shape, or form. It's just that we all need a help in some way, shape, or form. And especially for those individuals that you described, that 70% that you talked about, sometimes they just need a little nudge and a little guidance in the right path. And then all of a sudden they're off to the races,
right.
But you did bring up another good point, which I want to make sure that is not lost on our listeners, is that one of the other big issues with homelessness, and there's a direct correlation, is mental health and addiction problems.
That's right.
And that you see that probably in spades.
And what do you lose when you have addiction issues or mental health issues? You lose that human connection or that family connection a lot of times.
Yeah.
And we see that every single day. And that's the one common denominator with every single person that we serve, is that lack of human or family connection or that support. When you've got mental illness, you don't know how to have those connections. Whenever you've got addiction, your family's helped you 5 or 6 times. And sometimes that's not the right person to help you. And we have to be that human connection for each person.
Yeah.
I think it's very easy as nonprofits grow and as government funding is out there, it's very easy for us to kind of fall into government funding and say, okay, well, these are the guidelines. This is what we can do. And this is all we can do. And I'm more of the mind of, what is the barrier? And we can't be the barrier. So like for years, we were writing checks and people needed their driver's license and we were handing people a $5 check. And our director of finance was like, these checks are never getting cashed. It's driving me crazy trying to, I can't even reconcile an account. And I went to the staff and I was like, what if we drove people to the DMV? And so we started doing that in March. And so we've had 40 people get their IDs since June, right? So you kind of start June, July have been kind of hot months. But even in June and July, and looking at those numbers, 40 people have gotten on our bus on a Wednesday with a case manager and have driven to the DMV to get an ID, which is really the start, right? Yeah. You can get Social Security, you can get a job. And if you have that driver's license or ID, and it's not just the bus ride, and it's not the $5 check. I got a call from the DMV. It was great. I got a call from the DMV and they were like, I just wanted to let you know, we just had a group of your people here and they were the most well-behaved group of people. I mean, it was such a bizarre, but yeah. Great and beautiful. You know, I shared it with the staff and that it was that someone believed enough. We're going to take you. You can trust us. We're going to get you on the bus. We're going to sit with you because sometimes that DMV application is not easy to fill out, especially if someone can't read.
Yeah.
Or if someone struggles with reading. And so it's been so much more of that relationship and of coming beside people to helping them find that self-sufficiency, that self-responsibility, that self-confidence, and kind of understanding what it means to come back into community and know what that's like.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that speaks volumes. And again, sometimes it's just the little things that make a huge difference. And you're right. ID, we all assume, oh, everybody's got their ID. No, everybody doesn't have their ID. And sometimes that is the one barrier to entry into, like you said, finding a job, just going through a lot of different opportunities. Now, and I'm under the impression that you guys also have an ability to receive mail for people. And that's a big thing, right? Because I talked to somebody one time that was homeless and he was like, I just have nowhere to get my mail.
That's right.
And these are just things you don't think about. You just assume, oh, everybody's got a P.O. box or whatever. And that's not the case.
We have 878 people who get their mail at the day center.
Wow.
Right?
Wow.
We call mail in the morning. And it's such a big deal. I mean, that's, I guess daily you just kind of see the things that we take for granted, right? And that's just one of the things that we take for granted, that we're going to either get a gift, a nice little card or a bill in the mail, or just to even get your mail,
yeah.
Or just the human right of getting mail. And so, I mean, it's been crazy to sit. Sometimes I'll go and help kind of do mail. I love that aspect because it's just so simple. And every once in a while, there'll be a card from a family member that's trying to find somebody, or here's a birthday card, or just know that we're still out here and we still care about you. But there's something that makes you feel like you belong, right?
Yeah.
Even if it's just junk mail.
I know.
If it's got your name on it, it's like, yay.
It's like, wow, Valvoline coupon. I'm good to go.
I was thinking, yeah.
Yeah, anything. So.
You know, Little Caesars. Oh, right. This is great.
Yeah.
You know, it just means something. I mean, it's just something that you own. And another thing that we do that we don't talk about a ton is like personal ID storage. Like you go out and about and you've got your driver's license but where do you keep your birth certificate or where do you keep some of those documents that you need? And we found that there were repeat offenders, so to speak, of I just got my birth certificate, but it rained last night and I don't have it anymore. So we've actually got a locked up place I'm like, if we're going to get birth certificates, let's get two. It's like $5 more and let's keep one. And so that if you need your birth certificate, we have it on file for you. That's efficient for us, right?
Yeah,
it's a little,
yeah.
You know, it's like
a safe deposit box for folks.
Or just like even banking, you talk about safe deposit, right? Like, what is that like? Like, what's the banking relationship? That's another place that we've started going is to help people understand what their banking relationship needs to look like.
Yeah.
To walk into a bank and be with someone who's supporting you so that someone's not looking at you maybe by the way you're dressed or acting. And not that they would do that, but you know, you feel more comfortable going in with somebody. And when we first opened our shelter, our first 16 people are pretty, everyone that we serve has such a unique story. And we have board members that come out and help us. And each board member can name two or three people, you know, who I'm thinking of, right? They can name two or three people that they've gotten to know. But when we opened our shelter, there were a couple of guys that had been living in a tent for 8 years.
Really?
That had been waiting to be housed. And one of the guys, the first week he was there, he said, well, I guess I should probably go open up a bank account.
Yeah.
And we're like, okay, we'll drive you case management. We'll drive you to go and do that. We also are we believe very strongly that people that we are seeing, they take care of any of their legal issues. Because if we can get that done for you, like legal aid is great, but we have people that will come through shelter and case management is a whole other ball. I mean, it's a whole other, you know, the love of a case manager, the care of a case manager. That case manager really takes you a little bit further than just an immediate need, right? I'm going to set goals with you.
Sure.
And so they'll kind of set goals and it's like, do you have any priors? Like maybe we should pull up and see what that looks like. And maybe we need to navigate and advocate to see that you don't have anything that's holding you back when you do go look for a job.
Right.
And, you know, there's some embarrassment, there's some shame in that. But then for us to say, this is just a part of life. You're not alone.
We took four people to court last week, and it wasn't like four infractions. It was our case managers went before a judge and said, we want to work through this issue. How can we get this taken care of? You know, we don't want this to be on their record forever. And of course, the judicial system is in agreement that they don't want that either, right? Because that's kind of what keeps you from getting a job sometimes.
Absolutely.
Is if there's some priors on there. And so it's been really neat to, and we've been able to do that because the problem's not great yet. Yes, there are a lot of people who are unsheltered that you see in Northwest Arkansas, but we've been on the coasts where there's, I mean, it's in, you know, it's in the hundreds and thousands of people that you're seeing. So,
well, I mean, the way I like to describe it, and I use it as a metaphor, especially on the coast, trying to address homelessness, like in a city like San Francisco, or even in New York for that matter, is like trying to empty the ocean with a teaspoon. Mm-hmm. But in Northwest Arkansas, we don't necessarily need a teaspoon. We have much bigger ways that we can combat this issue and meet it head on and maybe avoid being part of the statistic that we see in a lot of other larger communities around the country. And again, that's no shade against them. It's just the reality of what they're dealing with. In Northwest Arkansas, I feel like, you know, I feel like we're still on the come up, right? Where we could really get a handle on this whole situation right now, today, 2024,
yes.
That could make a difference for what our kids experience in the next generation, in the next 20 years. So by 2046, when we're supposed to be a million people in Northwest Arkansas, that, you know, we will be the beacon of, hey, this is what it looks like for a region to deal with homelessness and to address it head on and to come out the other side looking like, wow, they kind of figured it out.
A couple of weeks ago, we had some of the city staff and the mayor from Fayetteville over at the shelter because you need to come by and see kind of what's going on, right? We've partnered with you with this. We want you guys to come out. We're focusing on Fayetteville right now because that's where we're located. But ultimately, and we shared this with the city of Fayetteville, the best outcome would be that we have a response.
Yeah.
That we can share with other municipalities and other communities, right? It doesn't have to have Seven Hills on it.
Right.
But if we can come up with a model that works and partnerships with the agencies that are going to make a difference, and we can go to other communities in Northwest Arkansas and say, we've kind of tried all of these things, right? This is what people do on this area and this area. But for our area, this is what we've tried and this is what is working. So we can come beside you and you can own it. But we want to help you know what that response is and it be something that will trickle down. And once we have that response, then we're not seeing 165 people during cold weather.
Right.
Because we get people from Springdale and Tawnytown and Ozark. I mean, I get calls all of the time from little churches that are like, we have two people that are in our sanctuary and we don't know what to do with them. We don't even know where to start. What's the response? And so we're on the phone with them trying to help them have a response and it be a safe way to work with people.
Oh my gosh. Yeah. You know, even as I'm just sitting here thinking about how you're describing it, it's almost like as you guys are creating the blueprint for addressing homelessness, that can be replicated throughout this Northwest Arkansas
That's
region.
Right.
Now, I don't want to have Will sit here silently because I know he's chomping at the bit to share a little bit of his experience. And so I do want to switch gears just a little bit because Will actually has a very unique position as you're the board president, correct?
Yes, sir.
For Seven Hills. And I think so you wear a different hat and you get to kind of see it from a different lens. And I'd love for you just to kind of share your thoughts about that and, you know, what you've come across as you've gotten involved with Seven Hills.
My microphone has been silent the last 20 minutes or so, because when you're sitting with an expert, you let the expert talk.
Absolutely.
And so Becky can talk this game way better than I can, but I will chime in as I feel needed. What my position here with the board is to be an ally. You know, that's what we are, to assist the staff. And every board member will tell you the heroes of the organization. It's not the board members. It's the staff.
Right.
They are on site working in a profession that is so incredibly challenging emotionally, what they see every day, the people that we are serving. It is not an easy job. And our staff, they do a phenomenal job day in and day out in treating people with dignity who might not get served dignity very often because of the position that they're in life. Where I see my role as a board member is to really help the majority of Northwest Arkansas realize that we are a land of milk and honey. As we discussed earlier, we have so many resources here. We have a world-class university, Walmart, Tyson, J.B. Hunt, bike trails, Crystal Bridges, you name it. You cannot find a best places to live national list category out there that doesn't include Northwest Arkansas at or near the top. We've got it all. But we can't be so cozy in our own comforts that we think that everyone has it all or that everyone is living this life of privilege here in Northwest Arkansas. And so as Seven Hills becomes more of a frequent topic and as homelessness becomes more of a frequent topic throughout Northwest Arkansas, then we will be reaching our goal much sooner. But people have to be willing to talk about it. We have to be willing to admit that we have this problem. For a while, I think we kind of wanted to look the other way. And I saw a sign on a storefront at the Fayetteville Square a few months ago that just kind of stopped me in my tracks. And it said, looking away is a privilege. And I just read that and I thought, that is so few words right there. But looking away is a privilege. If you want to look the other way to the homeless community, you can, because you're probably in a position of privilege to where you're going to go home to your roof over your head with your warm shower and a bed that you can sleep in with a pantry that has food in it. But we've got to make sure that more people aren't looking away and that some really key individuals and people and groups here in Northwest Arkansas no longer look away to this sector of our population that deserves it. And let's face it, they're human beings. And so they deserve some doses of dignity to get them just on the right track to life. And what we have seen at Seven Hills, especially over the last few months, it doesn't take a ton to get them back on track. If you just give them a little nudge, you will be shocked as to how quickly they really start making some major milestones in their life. A few nights with a bed, a few days of starting their morning with a shower, just getting those basic needs of that we call survival needs, basically. Just having a few days of that and some consistency can really start to get them on a track to a much better life. And we don't have to give them a whole mountain here. We just got to get them on the right track a little bit, and they can soon quickly become part of the community here in Northwest Arkansas with just a little bit of help.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, you and I talked offline before we actually scheduled this. And one of the things that you had mentioned to me was that you found it interesting that in an area like, as I call it, an embarrassment of riches in Northwest Arkansas, that homelessness is the problem that it is, right? And that it hasn't been, I don't know, eradicated would be the best way to describe it, right? Because I think it's kind of one of those things that if you get your arms around it, like I said earlier, you could make a tremendous difference. But at the board level, what have your talks been like when it comes to how to reach the right audiences to create awareness about it, right? Because I know that awareness is created differently, both at a staff level and at a board level. I'm on the board of Ozark Natural Foods, the co-op. Shout out to the co-op. But the reality is that the way the general manager of the co-op creates awareness and the way that we as a board create awareness are sometimes two different things. And I'd be curious to know what has the board talked about in terms of just raising that level of awareness to get people, especially people that are in your circles, to understand the, you know, what we're dealing with here.
It's a really unique topic to raise awareness to and to get people to care because of this reason. A lot of nonprofits and the supporters that they have are people who have been impacted by that service, by that nonprofit, or people near and dear to their heart have. If you have a child who plays Little League T-ball and you go to their games at the Boys and Girls Club, you see the facilities, you see that your grandkids are benefiting from that, and you think, I want to donate to that.
Right.
If you have a loved one who had a medical scare and they had great treatment at a certain medical facility, you want to give to that because they saved the life of one of your loved ones. Homelessness does not affect the 99.9% of people who have the ability to really make an impact. And we have to find the people that are tenderhearted and have so much empathy towards our neighbors who don't have anyone else to fight for them. the people that can make a huge difference to Seven Hills, let's face it, you're probably not ever going to be impacted directly by homelessness, or your family is probably not ever going to experience homelessness. So what we do at the board level and at the staff level is having conversations like this. Someone in Northwest Arkansas, whenever that this podcast gets released, is going to hear this and they're going to think, wow, that is a Northwest Arkansas problem. It's here. We are growing like as fast as any region in the country. And Nashville, Tennessee, and Austin, Texas, and San Francisco wish they would have had these discussions as early as we are right now, so that we can get ahead of this. But it's going to take more and more people showing some empathy to a group of people that could often be written off because someone may have the incorrect stereotype of, well, they're not contributors to Northwest Arkansas. They're not worthy of some generosity. And that couldn't be further from the truth.
Yeah. No, I mean, and it really is always about others, right? I mean, it's not, you know, I'd like it to be the me, myself, and I show, but the reality is it's always about other people. It's one of the reasons why I try to share this platform with as many people as possible. I'm thankful that it has become what it is, but more than anything, it's like everybody's got a story to share. And I want to get as many people behind a mic to share their story, because I recognize the power of storytelling and the power of getting people to recognize those little nuggets that can make a difference in people's lives. And so, I mean, what you guys are doing is, I think, is just tremendous. And it's just like I was telling somebody the other day, I said, there are certain aspects of society where we should never have to fight for funding. We should never have to fight for money, right? And it's like, you know, and I said, you know, you've seen the bumper sticker on the back of people's cars. I mean, maybe one day the Defense Department will have to have a bake sale to raise money, right? And it's nothing against the defense and how our spending is. It is what it is. The reality is that sometimes we don't place enough emphasis in the sectors of society where even a little bit can go a long way. Because what I'm hearing from both of you today is that it doesn't take a lot to move the needle here. Like, we could totally, like, and when I use that word, I'm using it not loosely. I'm saying we could eradicate homelessness here in Northwest Arkansas. Full stop. I mean, it can happen. You know, this is not like, oh my God, it's not a Pollyanna thought. It's not an idea where it's like, oh yeah, that would just, I don't know that we could do that. I can't say that about other parts of the country, like I said earlier, but if nothing else, if the takeaway that people have from listening to this is nothing else, is that, wow, I can be a part of the change that I so desperately seek in my community. Even in this one area of homelessness that, like you said, Will, most of us are not impacted by. I don't know anyone. I don't have a family member that I can point to that's homeless. But I know people that know people that are homeless. And I know people, I've run across people or come in contact with folks that are homeless. And I always try to talk to people, especially at the library, because, you know, David Johnson's done some great programs there with the 641 Deli, where, you know, I remember when him talking about it, he was like, one of the reasons why we want to open up this deli is because we want to make sure that the food insecure get a hot meal. And for a lot of people that don't know it, if you are food insecure, you can come right into that 641 Deli and get a hot bowl of Arkansas rice and beans and start from there. But I mean, and we try to do some of that at ONF. And I know other places are taking it upon themselves to help out people like that, where it's not like, oh, well, so-and-so is a nuisance because they're loitering or hanging around here. It's like, oh, what do you need? What, are you hungry? Yeah, sure. Let's help. Let's fix that.
You've got to change the stereotype. And the stereotype is, why is that man or woman not going to get a job? Mm-hmm. Well, okay, Mr. or ma'am, how many phenomenal life decisions would you be making if you had been sleeping in the woods for a few months? If you couldn't recall the last time you had a shower? If you couldn't recall the last solid meal you had? So kind of put yourselves in their shoes for a little bit before you cast judgment on this sector of society that we should be writing off. That's not the case whatsoever. And to your point, and I think Becky will follow up on this, the library is a phenomenal partner to us at Seven Hills and the unsheltered population as a whole.
Absolutely.
You just have to show up at the library right before it opens and there's people outside waiting.
I've been there. I've seen it.
We actually met with the library staff. We're trying to meet with a couple of our partners, but I was because I know that during the day when it's hot, I'll go up there and I'll recognize, you know, I came through there on my way here, parked in the library parking lot and walked through and saw eight people that I knew just sitting around, you know, had their phones plugged in. And I'll never forget when I met with them, I was like, thank you so much for what you do. And they were like, well, thank you for what you do. I said, well, you know, we have homeless in our name. He goes, yeah, but we have public in ours. Mm. And I was like, that's right. And just their heart and their training and understanding that that person is a person. It's somebody's mother, daughter, sister, school teacher. I mean, I think one of the misperceptions is that it's a bunch of young people that don't want to work.
Yeah.
Our average age is 55 to 62.
Wow.
So that's at the day center. People that we're seeing on a regular basis, people that we're seeing in shelter are, the majority of those people are older. They've been on fixed incomes or they've been struggling for a while. So we're not seeing a really young population. So, but you know, yes, the library is a great partner. The ORT is a great partner. You know, we went out and met with the ORT and I wanted to thank
Ozark
them.
Regional Transit.
Thank you. Ozark Regional Transit.
Yes.
Because they're transporting our people from the day center to the shelter, which that's one route. And you've got your stuff, right? You know, you've got your bag of things. And I just wanted to go out and say, you know, we're transitioning. We're going to increase that load to 64, not just 32. And they were like, whatever you're doing is working. This has been the best summer we've ever had on that route. We've not had one single incident on that route. And that's the first year we've ever been able to say that. So a lot of us is, you know, a lot of that is us getting to know them a little bit and have a relationship with them. And a lot of it is our changing in programming. But, you know, it's not one solution. I think that's the part people want to say, and either, I mean, nonprofits or entities, it's so easy to say, we just have to solve the homelessness problem, the people who are unsheltered, but it's people. So if you work in an office and there's a problem, it would be really easy to say, we just have to solve this problem. But each person has a unique personality. Mm-hmm. Each person has a story. We talk about that diversity and how beautiful that is and the fabric of which we're made. And when we're dealing in professional environments or on nonprofit organizations or at the, you know, at the co-op, right? You kind of walk in, we've all got our own story.
Exactly.
And that's true of the people that we serve. Each person has a different need. It's not one, there might be some common threads, but each person is so unique and different that we have to be malleable enough as an organization. That's kind of been my goal. I tell the staff every day, like, listen and ask questions, like, be very curious. And what are we missing? What are we are we making it too hard to do something?
Yeah.
Are we the barrier? Because we can never be the barrier. And if you need to be able to say yes, you have my permission to say yes. And let's do that. One of the things that we did when we opened the shelter was hired six people who'd been unsheltered. Mm. Because we can, because we're not a part of a national nonprofit. We're grassroots. So I was like, I really think it would be really great for us to hire some people who've been coming to the day center that might be looking for work.
Sure.
And let's go ahead and see. So we had 75 people apply. We had to go through 75 applications. We tried to interview as many people as, right? It's a good experience to interview. We've hired six. And as soon as we hired them, they got a staff shirt, got a job, started getting a paycheck. We gave them a place to live. We actually have staff housing. And we said, you can live here for a year. We're not going to charge you. You have to do case management. You have to get your health in order. You have to get your mental health in order. And you have to save your money. Because you can live here for a year, but after that, you're out.
Yeah.
And you can learn, you can work for us for as long as you want. Like, please work for us as long as you want. And we've already had five of those people since March get back on their feet and find a place to live.
Wow.
It didn't take that year. It didn't take that much time. And we talk about people being a part of, you know, society and matter. I mean, there's one of our staff is so great. He goes out to eat. His whole thing is to support Fayetteville. He goes out to eat with his money that he earns. Every single week, he's reviewing every single restaurant there is. He, you know, anyone who's running for office, he's down there taking pictures and wants to be, he's so excited to be, to live in Fayetteville and to be a part of Fayetteville and what Fayetteville has to offer.
Yeah.
In January, you wouldn't have thought that if you saw him.
Wow.
And so it's really neat to see that turnaround very quickly for us. And it doesn't take a lot. It just takes getting to know somebody and solving it. You know, it's not a one-time solution. It's individual for sure.
Man. So tell me a little bit about, these stories are all great, and I'm sure you have a ton of really good stories. Tell me a little bit about the staff that you have and the difference that they're making on a daily basis.
You go through and you see the staff working, like you will kind of mentioned what they see every single day, but you walk through and you see the staff that you have and you think you could be working anywhere else. Why are you working here? I never say that out loud. Mm-hmm. You know, you don't want to say that out loud.
That's what you're thinking though. Yeah.
You don't want to give anyone liberty to go look. No, I'm just kidding. But each person that works for us has chosen to work for us.
Yeah.
And it's very evident. You know, you go through and it could, and I will know the ins and outs of what have happened over the weekend or at shelter or, you know, cause we're constantly in communication with everybody because we now have staff 24/7. We have people working at the shelter, and that's why it's important to have people who have lived experience working at the shelter, because when you come in after being in a tent all night, you know, for months you've been in a tent, you come in and there's structure, you're going to roam at night, right? Roaming, that's when you're out and about, is at night where no one's going to see you. And so the patience and the compassion, the drive, the perseverance, I mean, there's that our staff has, that every Monday you come to work and they're all back and you're like, yay. You know, they're there because they want to be there. We try to give them the flexibility and to empower our staff to feel like they're making a difference and to support them whenever things don't go well, because it's every day is different at the day center. Like every day is different. And a lot of two or three of our staff have come from internships at the U of A, and they started out doing their internship and they decided they wanted to stay. We've got staff that work for us that have lived experience or come through our program or have been have worked for a partner agency and wanted to come and work for us. But we're not the easiest place to work. We don't pay this amazing wage. It's just, and they believe, like, we had a situation, we've been helping somebody. The first thing is, do you want to help yourself? Like, how can we help you help yourself? Like, what do you want to do? But there's a situation where we've been working with someone who maybe couldn't make that decision. We needed to kind of help move them along a little bit. Mm-hmm. And that has been such a roller coaster of trying to get this person placed in assisted living in a place where they're going to be safe. They're 68 years old. They're sleeping on the sidewalk outside of our day center. They're not safe. And we have seen so many highs and lows through this whole process. And every time there's been a failure, the staff has sat and said, okay, let's try again tomorrow.
Yeah.
And just that, you know, that again, that perseverance and that desire to do that for somebody that's never going to be able to thank you or appreciate what you've done is, it's hard to match. And my job is easy compared to what our staff does every day. I mean, I agree with what Will said earlier for sure.
Well, I can imagine. I mean, shout out to the staff at Seven Hills for the work that you're doing. And I know a lot of times outside of the four walls that you're there, that it goes unacknowledged, right? And I think people need to understand that. If you see anybody that works at Seven Hills and you can buy them a beer or a drink or anything like that, or just a thank you, you know, definitely do that. I want to encourage folks that have come in contact with people that are working at Seven Hills just to thank them for the yeoman's task that they are dealing with on a daily basis, because it does make a difference. And I think sometimes we just need to create awareness around that. And so, I mean, there's just so much that we can unpack here, but I'd love for you maybe to share one story that has kind of been a through line for you when it comes to dealing with this issue of homelessness, and really kind of like one of those stories that just reinforces the why behind why you're doing what you're doing at Seven Hills.
Okay, I've got one. It's hard to
pick. You go first, I'll go next.
You both to share.
You've got one,
because
I don't want to take yours.
Go for it.
I think the one thing, whenever I see someone who's unsheltered, the first thing that comes to mind is lost, right?
Yeah.
Lost in direction, just lost. And so we have someone that was one of our first 16 that came through shelter. And she was someone that has been, her and her husband came. When I asked Teresa, and I can say her name because she's been speaking for us, how long have you been coming to Seven Hills is always my first question, right? Like, how did you get here? How long have you been coming? Her and her husband had been coming to Seven Hills for 15 years. And she lost her husband about 5 or 6 years ago, and she just was lost. And she'll say that word, lost. I was lost. And when I first started, she was lost, and she was kind of in and out and getting in trouble and really struggling. And we sat with her one day, and we were like, you know, Teresa, we're going to open the shelter, and we think you should be one of the first 16 people that comes into shelter.
Yeah.
And she was like, I can do that. I'll do that. I'm up for it. I'm ready. And she came in, and she's like, and she's a little bit older, came in. Did shelter, was great at shelter. We got her on a CPAP machine. I mean, all of these things that she'd been struggling with her health, you know, got her some benefits that she needed. And she was like, I really want to do something to help you guys. And she said, I want to be in charge of the clothing closet, which anytime someone wants to help, if you have clothes, like, we're always looking for work boots, jeans, things like that, that are the basics to getting back out. You know, when in the winter we'll need coats, but in the, you know, closed-toed shoes, people are so great to donate dress shoes, but closed-toed shoes and things that will keep you safe when you're walking around Fayetteville are perfect.
Sure.
But so she takes over the clothing closet almost to push one of our board, our past board president out because she's doing such a great job. And she's like, I want to do this. And so through that, she's gotten, she just got like her 9-month chip. Like she's been going to AA and she's sober.
Wow.
And you walk into the day center and she's like, hey, did you know I got my chip? And she's got her chip out and she's so proud of herself and so glad. And so we just moved her 2 weeks ago into her own place. And she still comes back and volunteers at the day center every day.
Man.
And she'll tell you whenever you walk in the door, we had a couple of people come through for tours last week and she's like, I'm not lost anymore. I don't feel lost.
Mm-hmm.
And so she's just one of, there's so many variations of that one story, but you know, if you can help someone, you know, find themselves, kind of get back to who they are, to where they can give back, like that's a story that will stick with me for a long time.
Sure.
Just sharing her story.
Man, I love that. Will, are you going to one up that or?
No, no, Teresa wins with her story. Mine is not necessarily from a person. I could tell a few similar stories like Teresa, but the first thing that came to my mind, and it's really one of the first things that was one of my first aha moments when I joined the board 7 or 8 years ago, was just the basic need of a shower. And my friends and family know that I have a problem of taking way too many showers and way too long of showers. Okay, I'm trying to do better with my water conservation, but something so simple as a shower. And we only have 2 showers at our day center. And
yeah.
Randy, you said we should have 20. And you're right. And
absolutely.
One day we're going to work towards that. And we're going to have a bigger, better facility where we can get more people services. But the idea of a shower and kind of the metaphorical meaning of what a shower is, you're entering dirty and you're leaving clean, or you're leaving refreshed and almost as a new person. And we have people who just come to our day center, people that are living in Northwest Arkansas, and they are so thankful and they are so appreciative to take a shower, something that 99.9% of us do every day and we don't think twice about it.
Yeah.
And you can see them, you know, our showers are private. They have dignity to, you know, take a shower and change clothes. And when they exit that room, almost like a little dressing room, you just see this person who has a renewed sense of life almost. You see them with a little pep in their step. Maybe they have also gone to our clothing closet and gotten an article of clothing or two that they need, but they're entering our day center. They're entering the shower, maybe down on their luck a little bit, maybe down in general. And they're taking a shower and they're getting this little boost that you could just feel, and you can just see that they're going to do something productive today. And if they can string a few of those days together, then that's life-changing for them. And just something as simple as a shower.
So what I'm hearing you say is that we need to do some fundraising to get those 18 other showers I prophesied over here. So we're going to get 18 showers at Seven Hills. And, you know, I mean, again, it's... I joke about it sometimes, and I even said it with you guys, that there are people in our community that are neighbors of ours that literally could sneeze and solve all these problems from a financial perspective. And it's not to put the onus on any one individual, right? Because we all collectively could help. I could give some money towards some shower tiles. I mean, it doesn't take as much as we think. It just, I think more, it's more about awareness and the difference, right? But you're absolutely right. I mean, I know what you're saying. I used to take long showers back in the day, but you know, I sometimes, as I'm driving around, Will, it's funny that you mentioned that. I think about that, especially like on a hot day like today. And I'm thinking, man, you know, I can only imagine what it's like. And I remember, you know, my mother telling me stories about my grandfather, and this was back in the day in Pittsburgh. He would just bring people in the house that were homeless and would feed them and give them a shower. And, you know, it's my grandfather used to say, there before the grace of God go I, right? I mean, it's like I could be that person. And sometimes it's just the smallest thing, right? And that's why, I mean, what you guys are doing at Seven Hills is so important fundamentally to just for the underpinning of our society that we need to be doing these kinds of things to make a difference in the lives of other people, especially those that just don't know what a hot shower is like or haven't had, can't remember the last time they had one. And something as simple as that can make a huge difference.
Right.
It really can. So, man, I got goosebumps just thinking about that and the difference. So for our listeners, for those that are, that have really been impacted, maybe you have, maybe I should get Kleenex to sponsor this episode, but because, I mean, I'm sitting here trying not to keep myself composed because I'm doing the interview. But for those that are listening that are really moved by what they're hearing and just the fact that while they were kind of aware, they were aware, I would like to say aware adjacent, not like fully aware. How can people get involved with Seven Hills? Give us a couple of different ways that we can get involved with the work that you're doing.
Absolutely. Well, if you can follow us on any social media platform, we're there.
Right. And we'll be sure to put all of that in the show notes. But you can shout out the website is the number 7hillscenter.org. And then we'll make sure that you have links to all of the social media on our show notes so that you guys can connect with them. I'm going to connect with them. I think I'm already following you guys. I know I'm already following you guys on the major platforms, but go ahead and give us the rest.
And we share all of the time our needs list, just basic needs. We have an Amazon list. We have a Walmart list. You know, if someone really wants, they want to do something, but they don't want to do it themselves. You know, supporting us, you know, we have monthly donors that come in and give us money every single month. And that adds up. I mean, that's what we do. You know, we're a small organization and we do a lot with a little. You know, it doesn't take a lot to make a difference right away in the lives of the people that we touch or in the staff that we serve. So that's a great way, you know, funding, you know, making a donation, a monetary donation is great. You know, as you clean out closets, like work shoes, things like that, you might look at something and think, I don't need this anymore, but we could probably use it.
Yeah.
You can drop it off at our 1832 South School site and we're good to go. And so we'll sort it and make sure it gets handed out. We are serving meals on the weekends at our overnight shelter. And that's one of the best times for the people who stay in our shelter because people are coming in and like sitting down and actually fixing a meal on Saturdays and Sundays and visiting and sharing time with people. So that's great. Stuff like that is very, very helpful. If you want to share a meal or if you want to come and volunteer, we always need volunteers. So that and to help share and advocate for people who you see,
yeah.
You know, it's always sometimes it just takes that one person. You know, I hear Will's experiences and I hear our other board members' experiences. And I know that we've got a board that they're touching the lives of people all over Northwest Arkansas. And to know that that is the messaging that's going out there, that is so huge for us, right? Because it really breaks that barrier. It makes it a little bit easier to say, and this is what you might think is happening, but this is what we can do to make a difference. And so always advocate.
Yeah. No, you're absolutely right. And again, I would encourage anybody that has been moved by what they heard today, as I know I have been, I would encourage you to get involved with everything that Becky and Will are doing at Seven Hills, because again, it just takes a little bit of each of us to make a difference. And I really want to encourage you to do that. Any final words to say from the board perspective before we close out this conversation?
First off, Randy, thank you for the time and the exposure that you're giving us, giving our organization. And just for those that are listening, wherever you are right now in Northwest Arkansas, you can help.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's a monetary donation, how many zeros it has on the number.
Yeah.
If it's clothing, if it's food, if it's time, if it's energy, if it's resources, you can help and we need your help. We are not, as Becky said, we're a tiny organization with a humongous impact. We do not have a bank account full of cash.
Sure.
I mean, we are helping so many people. We are changing lives. And I'll be honest with you, we need your help.
Yeah.
We need the help of Northwest Arkansas. We've got too much here to look the other way,
yeah.
As I said earlier.
Yeah.
I want more people to not look the other way.
I agree. I agree 100%. And I hope that people are really taking this to heart that are listening to this episode, that you hear what Will is saying. You hear Becky, you hear their hearts in terms of how they are trying to serve this community and do it from a place of excellence. And so, I mean, and we have so many organizations that are doing that in Northwest Arkansas, but Seven Hills is not alone and they haven't cornered the market in that, but this is an area of importance that we must address. I say capital M-U-S-T address. We have to address homelessness in the same way that we're looking at how do we increase housing? How do we address food insecurity? These are all things that are near and dear to my heart. And you've heard me talk about it plenty of times on this podcast. So I really want to encourage everybody that's hearing this to be that change that you seek and figure out a way to support it. Just go to the number 7hillscenter.org and figure out a way for you to give back. It may be your time. Maybe you just don't have enough cash to give, but you can give of your time. There are a number of different ways that you can give. And is there a way to sign up for like recurring giving?
Yes.
Okay. All right.
Absolutely.
So I'm going to put it out there now. I'm going to, from I Am Northwest Arkansas, because this community has been so good to us and we don't have a lot of money, but I'm going to start with $25 a month giving, recurring to Seven Hills. That may buy some tiles. It may buy some soap that we need in some of these showers, but it's a start. And so anybody that's listening to this, I challenge you to meet me there or go beyond that. If you can go beyond that, then do that. And as I can, I will increase it. But I'm going to start off with a $25 monthly recurring donation to Seven Hills just to be that change that I want to see happen in our community. And I always like putting my money where my mouth is, what little bit I have. And I would encourage others to do the same because it certainly will make a difference. So there's that. And Becky, Sisson, Will, Raw, thank you guys so much for joining us today on this podcast. This has been a special conversation. And I know we went a little longer than normal, but we're certainly not in Joe Rogan territory. So this is maybe you break this up into two treadmills, right? 30 minutes one day, 30 minutes the next. You hear the whole episode. And then please, please share this with a friend because this is one of those special episodes that we feel is worth listening to maybe a second time and also sharing it with as many people as possible. So thank you guys both so very much.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, there you have it, folks. Another episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. To learn more about us or to read or download the show notes from today's episode, as well as the links that you'll need for sevenhillscenter.org, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. Remember, you can listen to this podcast and sign up for our free newsletter to keep up with us and all things NWA. Sign up today. You can subscribe or follow the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast wherever you listen to it on every major podcasting platform. And please, please, please consider rating and reviewing us on Apple Podcasts. Remember, our podcast comes out every Monday, rain or shine. I'm your host, Randy Wilburn, and we'll see you back here next week for another new episode of the I Am Northwest Arkansas podcast. Peace.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of I Am Northwest Arkansas. Check us out each and every week, available anywhere that great podcasts can be found. For show notes or more information on becoming a guest, visit iamnorthwestarkansas.com. We'll see you next week on I Am Northwest Arkansas.